go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to the next episode of Deep Space High, a podcast where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest episodes from today's sci-fi TV. I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve. Chris, what the hell's going on?
Nothing much. Just, you know, chilling, enjoying my day.
Yeah.
Enjoying watching some Mandalorian.
Yeah. Had to spend a couple, I won't say couple hours, but had to spend a decent amount of time doing research and watching the episode for today. So, it's always fun.
Yeah, I mean, I got to rewatch them a couple of times, so it's great to actually be able to see Baby Yoda. I love Baby Yoda. I mean, that's just the best thing that's come out of the show so far.
Yeah, and I like how rewatchable the first two episodes are. I mean, we sat down last week and watched episode one, sat down this week, watched episode two, and I watched it twice. It was just as enjoyable the second time I watched it in the same day than it was the first time I watched it ever.
Right. Well, I remember the first time that I watched it, I watched it sober, and then I watched it a couple more times, and then the most recent time that I watched it today, I watched it while I was smoking. So it's interesting, you know, all the little subtle humor just becomes so much funnier when you're high and you just enjoy the show that much more.
Yeah. Not, I mean, I was stone cold sober watching it, and all the subtle little humor, all the subtle humor was still funny. It's like, oh my gosh.
And I don't know. Maybe it's just cause you know, you're stoned and you just think it's that much better.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the episode.
You can do it. You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it!
I'm gonna go do it!
I actually like this part of Mandalorian better than I liked Picard. The name of the episodes are so much easier. The name of this episode was The Child.
Yes. Yes, I actually looked through all of them, and I don't think any of the titles have more than like three or four letters. Or sorry, not letters, words.
Words, yes. Words.
Because it's chapter blank, the whatever. It's usually that, like, the first one was The Mandalorian, second one's The Child. I think the next one's The Sin.
I think you're right.
But we'll get to that. We'll get to that later. But I like this opening scene. Got to talk about it a little bit, because the attention to detail where you see, you know, Mando's coming back from getting Baby Yoda, and if you look at his helmet, like, before he gets attacked, you see the reflection of his attackers jumping over the gap above him. You see shadows kind of moving. If you pay close attention to his helmet, you could see all that. And I was like, damn, someone did it. Good job planning that out.
Oh yeah, I mean, I noticed that when watching the episodes, they put so much attention to detail, and it's like, even like the nitty gritty stuff that I, like, you try to point out, they did a really good job at explaining it. I'm like, that's just great directing.
The funny thing is, they just got out of a firefight, and it almost seems like he polished his helmet because it's that shiny. And I'm like, it's like, you got out of a pretty intense firefight. I'm pretty sure you might have some, you know, blaster residue and some sand all up on that shit. Unless he's got like Rain-X or something on his helmet, the way it just pops right off.
I mean, he could just have like a towel or something to wipe it down.
Could
just be that the metal's naturally shiny.
Good. But that first fight scene was amazing. 3-on-1. I mean, the stunt choreography and the fight choreography was just top notch. And it's top notch.
It really was.
This whole series.
and they looked they looked so real, like the makeup, the artistry, like they did a great job. I don't know if there was any CGI of the aliens that were doing that, but
no,
they do a really good job with the CGI.
I'm pretty sure it's all most of it with the aliens is practical effects. The Transdotians is what the species is called, known for their bounty hunting. So that's a nice little fun fact. I think some hardcore Star Wars fans will know another Transdotian out there.
Chris don't.
Yeah, Chris won't because he's not a hardcore Star Wars fan. But the rest of you, you know who the hell I'm talking about. So,
okay then.
I'll make Chris go back and watch the OG trilogy or Clone Wars and realize who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I haven't watched them in a while, so it's probably just... If I watch it again, maybe I'll notice.
Yeah, but that first scene was nice, but you learn in the next scene when he's kind of recovering and, you know, resting for the night, you see Mandalorian messing with his plate. And this technology is interesting because it's... I didn't realize this the first time I watched it. I realized it on the second viewing I had today, where there's a lot of circuitry within his chest plate.
Right.
And there's something, a power component. So the power component went out. He was obviously having to tweak with it, and he gets it reactivated or whatever. So I'm thinking because his chest plate's not real Baskar or Baskar.
It's just a really good armor.
Well, it's like an armor, and in my mind now, I'm thinking it's some sort of deflector technology for a chest plate.
Could be. Or...
Because why else would you need all that circuitry in there?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Maybe it's a cooling system.
Maybe it acts as a shield or a deflector technology to repulse bolts since he doesn't have a real Beskar steel.
Well, I remember in the last episode, they talked when Mando dropped off the Beskar steel that they... I don't remember because nobody ever wants to use their names. The blacksmith?
I call her the armorer.
The armorer?
I think that's how she's titled in the subtitles too, is the armorer.
Okay, the armorer. They were talking about how they were going to use the leftover Beskar for the younglings. Mm-hmm. Maybe what they do is they use that leftover to make like a super thin layer of the metal over that kind of armor to give some protection for the younglings when they get old enough to, or fledglings, right? Yeah, fledglings, not younglings. Younglings were
Jedi. No, foundlings.
Foundlings?
Foundlings. Like I found you, and then we're going to add a linga to the end of it. Ling-a-ding ding.
Oh, foundlings.
Foundlings.
Okay. Well, foundling. God damn it. Now you're throwing me off. but you know where I was going with this.
Yeah.
And that maybe that's what they do as for their armor.
Maybe it just goes to fun foundling activities. Maybe they just incorporate it into their little armor for when they're training and practicing. I hope we see more of that in season two, more about the foundlings and...
Yeah, but that would make sense to me, though, if they were like, okay, your rite of passage as like a, you're becoming a true Mandalorian ceremony is, okay, here's your armor, you get a little bit of Beskar, now you go and earn it, you know, go get more, or find more, or some shit like that, you know what I mean?
Maybe, like I said, I hope this goes several seasons and we can dive back, or dive down into the new lifestyle that they have for Mandalorians.
Yeah, that was something that I thought was, or I was kind of curious about. You know, they said Baby Yoda was 50 years old, and he's still a baby, but how old was actual Yoda when he died?
Actual Yoda was about 900 years old.
When 900 years old you reach, look as good you or not.
But 900, and then even... In Return of the Jedi, he says, I've been training Jedi for 800 years. So obviously, 0 to 50 for Yoda species, infantry. Infancy.
Infantry.
Infancy.
At least it's not just me.
Yeah. It's the infancy. And then...
And then what? From 50 to 100, it skyrockets to adulthood?
Not adulthood, but it's probably young adulthood. You know, it's maybe... Maybe he hits teenage at 75, because you got to think Yoda's lifespan is 900 years for that species. And it only, you know, and a Jedi apprentice is only an apprentice for like 10 years, they're pretty much found at birth or a little after birth, before like two or three. They spend the first 10 years kind of going through the Jedi training and all that fun stuff before they're even assigned to a master. And then pretty much from 10, 11, 12, depending on if they feel they're ready, to late teens, maybe even 20, they're an apprentice until they can pass the trials and become a Jedi Knight. Obviously, he, you know, Yoda species would have to go through his training probably in his 80s.
Damn.
We'll see. We'll see how this goes, because Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau are two of the top-notch Star Wars nerds, and they'll explain this shit. They have to in later seasons.
I'm sure they will. I guess we're going to have to wait and find out, because, I mean, just thinking about that, you know, because I knew he was around 900 years old, and I just thought, wait, he's already 50 and still an infant. How is that going to work age-wise? So I thought I'd talk to somebody who knows more than I do.
Yeah. Well, right now it's just guessing, so. So I'm thinking the next 20 years, 25 years, he does a little more accelerated growth. He almost has to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after, so once we get past that episode where they were, that scene where they were resting, you know, we get Mando returning back, finding Jawas or stealing all of his components from a ship. And he just starts fucking blasting away. Like, goddamn, that gun can literally do everything. And then you got Baby Yoda just staring over like, yes, get him, get him, get him. It's just, it's the most adorable thing ever.
Yeah, it even turned into a viral meme for a while.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. But yeah,
I love those memes.
It was cool seeing, because, you know, obviously the Jawas are going to give a little nostalgic factor back to the episode 4 days.
So wait, now does this mean that the Jawas are just on any desert planet, not on Tatooine?
I won't say any desert planet, because you see Jawas later in the series. You do see them on another planet. They're like traders. They're, you know, they're scavengers. They go and pick stuff up, pick apart people's ships. They go and sell them. You know, they're on Tatooine and this desert planet. You see them in a later episode on the same planet that the Bounty Hunter Guild is located.
Well, I mean, I'm just like the giant ship or tank or whatever the hell that they used to transport around is the exact same one from the one they had on Tatooine. And I figured those would be pretty unique to most desert locations rather than, I can't imagine that working too well on Hoth or maybe, or even like Endor, where you got a jungle planet like that.
No, I mean, you know, maybe they adapt to their needs.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. It's one of those, things that we'll have to wait and see.
I guess so.
But yeah, I mean, but talking about the scene a little more, he starts disintegrating, as Darth Vader would say, and Empire Strikes Back, all these Jawas, and it's just a madhouse. And then they freaking take off in their sandcrawler, and you get probably one of the coolest fights I think you'll ever see in Star Wars.
I know, right? He puts up a pretty good fight with all these Jawas, and I like how they're just throwing random shit at him, just trying to get him.
I know.
And then he's just grabbing him, just throwing him out the window.
I know, he's ruthless. He's like, fuck.
Jeez.
He's already disintegrated several. He's thrown multiple from more than 30 feet.
Yeah, they even had to like cut down one of their own like cannon things to get him down.
Yeah.
Because he was hooked on the cannon thing.
Yeah, then he gets to the top, gets electrocuted by at least a dozen Jawas and falls. It has to be 50 feet. How the hell did he survive a fall like that? I have no idea, but
I don't know. But, man.
But, you know, if he didn't survive it, we wouldn't have a series to talk about, so.
That's true.
But I like in this how every so often they'll take a shot at Baby Yoda and you could just see him trailing behind the sandcrawler trying to keep up. it's like, what's the range on that thing? How fast can that little bassinet go?
I don't know. I was thinking about that too. Like, was it, I was thinking maybe it's magnetic to it and that's why it can keep up, but that wouldn't make sense because he's able to control the directions of it.
Well, it's not, I mean, he obviously programmed the thing onto his wristband, so I get, it's like a homing beacon that will follow him wherever he goes to try to keep it within a certain range.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he gets pissed, and after he wakes, or, you know, he wakes back up, goes back to his ship, sees if he can start it, can't start it, finds out all his guns are gone. He's like, fuck this. He goes to see.
Hey, I'd be pissed if I found out all my guns were gone too.
Yeah, true. True. So then he's like, ah, well, I better go talk to the only person I know on this planet, the Ugnaught.
Mm-hmm.
Which.
That wasn't his name, was it?
No, it's a species. I don't think they've revealed his name yet. Still.
No, I don't think they have.
So.
And I just love how Baby Yoda just manages to get out of his bassinet, floating bassinet or whatever, all the freaking time or whenever he pleases.
I know. And then he's chasing around a frog and eats it whole. That was hilarious.
Oh, I know, right?
It was like, spit it out. Fuck you.
No, I'm hungry.
No thanks. Yeah. And then they, you know, the Ugnaughts obviously like, all right, we got to go talk to the Jawas and get all your parts back. So they go talk to the Jawas.
It's got one of my favorite lines in it.
I'm a Mandalorian. Weapons are part of my religion.
Because they arm themselves when they see him.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, he just fucking slaughtered
dozens of them. Dozens. So even the Ugnaught says it. You just killed a lot of their comrades. So what do you expect their reaction to be?
Yeah, something like
that. And it's funny, we can talk about this for a minute. There's subtle humor in it because Mando speaks Jawa. How the hell he learned it, I don't know. But then the Jawas are like, you speak Jawa like a Wookiee.
There's a bit of subtle humor with the Jawas.
There is, but you know the point. The topic of discussion I wanted to bring up with the Jawas is, I was listening to them and it reminded me of Minions from like Despicable Me and the Minions movie.
Yeah, I think they based like their sound off of the Jawas. Because what they did is that language is like a combination of like five different languages. I think they do use that Jawa, the same kind of voice modulation that they do for the Jawas, as the Minions.
Yeah, they have to, because it was like, if I closed my eyes, it was like, I'm pretty sure there's a Minions movie on. It's like, that's what it felt like. And I was like, this is weird. And at first I was like, Star Wars stole the Minions. But I was like, no, the Jawas appeared in 1977. The Minions stole the Jawas. I was like,
yeah, they did.
Damn.
They did.
Damn.
That's funny. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, but then, you know, they're sitting there trying to bargain. And they were like, okay, well, if we can't have his Beskar, can't have Baby, we want you to fetch us an egg. We're all like, what? Mandalorian's like, what? What? An egg? And then you see the Ugnaught. He's like, oh crap, we're all screwed. And then ensues probably one of the coolest but yet weirdest fight scenes, because, you know, there's things I could pick out of this, where he goes and tracks down this beast that's guarding its den.
When the beast finally reveals itself, I mean, it looks like the same rhino from Star Wars The Clone Wars, the prequel movie, number two.
Yeah.
It looks like the one that they use on Geonosis to attack, kind of looks like it, but with more CGI or touched up CGI.
Probably a similar type of species, but that rhino in Attack of the Clones had, I think, two horns and was more like our rhinos, where this one's kind of like a mix of, I would probably say, a woolly mammoth and a rhino. And then because the rhino's horn on this one was freaking long.
Maybe it's just been a while since I've watched the prequels.
Maybe. I think you need to go back and watch them all. Pay attention to them, too. Don't spend all the time on your GD phone.
Well, no, I actually pay attention to the movies when I watch them. I just haven't watched them in a while. I think it's been at least 2 years since I've sat down and watched them all.
No, it hasn't. You watched them before. You watched them all when Rise of Skywalker came out.
No, I think I just watched all the prequels. Or not the prequels, the first three.
You and Dad rolled through all of them.
Did we?
Oh, my God.
I was probably stoned.
That's why you don't remember shit.
I have a question for you. Another one. How does a blaster get jammed when thrown in the mud?
That's the thing. It's not really a blaster. Have we had to see him reload it yet?
Well, I mean, he shot it, so he's had to have reloaded.
But have they showed it on screen?
Probably. We just weren't paying attention.
To answer your question, I'm not sure, but I think he has to reload that thing after like maybe four or five shots, because he has to insert some sort of cartridge in there. And I think what happened was he wasted all his shots on the Jawas, or it was out of juice. It was out of juice for some reason, and he couldn't get the compartment open to reload it.
Yeah, because I noticed that when watching it, and I wrote it in my notes. Like, wait, he's trying to. It almost looks like open something, and he's banging on the gun and it's jammed and he can't use it. So I'm like, wait, how does it get jammed?
Yeah. And I think the best picture I can paint is imagine a breakaway or a double barrel shotgun with a ton of mud in it, and you just can't get it to break open to pull the shells out to put a new cartridge in.
Yeah, I guess so.
And like I said, I don't know if that's been revealed yet in this episode, but they do show it somewhere, and that's pretty much what's going on.
Hmm?
But he gets his ass kicked. And speaking, continuing to talk about this fight with this rhino, he gets desperate because his pistol blaster wasn't effective. His rifle blaster is jammed, uses the flamethrower, and then he uses a grappling hook and gets it into his nose. This damn thing is 10 times his size and is going to drag him around like a rag doll. Oh, what was he thinking? I know he had to be in some sort of desperation mode.
Well, I think he was relying on his gun to work.
Well, yeah, you're relying on your gun to work, but you're like, okay, the gun's not working. What's my next step? Well, let's grappling hook this thing and get dragged around like a buffoon for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like a move of desperation.
That's what I was saying. He got desperate and he made an illogical move, so the Vulcans would say.
Well, I mean, it happens. Nobody's perfect.
Yeah, true. It was a little weird in that scene. It stuck out when I watched it, so I had to bring it up.
Well, I think the weirdest part about that scene is he manages to kill that thing with a tiny-ass little knife.
Well, yeah, but not before Baby Yoda stops in his track using the Force.
Well, yeah, I mean, that definitely caught them both off guard, obviously.
Well, yeah, the stupid rhino was like, what's going on? And Mando's like, what's going on?
Well, I mean, I thought it was funny because it was like a last plea move. He had that little knife out. He's just holding it, sitting in the mud. I'm like, okay, let's see if this is doing anything. And then once Baby Yoda does his thing with the hand, and then he lets him go, he just stabs him in the head and is like, oh, shit. Okay, maybe that knife was enough.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I thought about it, too, and I was like, that knife brought it down. But if you know the anatomy a little bit, he probably just was able to hit the spinal cord or hit some artery or whatever and kill it.
No, I don't think he needed to do that. I think he just was hoping to get the brain. And hoping the steel was strong enough to get through.
That didn't look like he went for the brain. It looked more like a neck shot. That's why I was saying the artery or the vertebrae.
No, I think he went right by near its eye. So I think he was hoping to get the brain.
I don't know. It was hard to tell with the angle we got.
Yeah.
But the Force. The Force is in the Mandalorian. Not the Mandalorian, but in the show The Mandalorian.
Yes.
But you never know. He can, you know, be Force sensitive for all we know.
Well, I mean, yeah, he could be, but... You know, I think when you saw a Baby Yoda, you kind of assumed, yeah, I think he's probably going to have to do something with the Force.
Yeah, I mean, it's so, you know, Star Wars is about, for non-Star Wars fans, space wizards. And so, you know, the Force has got to play a role somehow, some way in whatever show, whatever movie, whatever story they're telling, for the most part.
Right. For the most part.
So that was the big question I had coming into the series is like, okay... You know, I'm down for watching a show about a Mandalorian and about the Mandalorian culture and about bounty hunting and the underworld. But I was like, it's not quite Star Wars if you don't have the Force. Not necessarily Jedi and Sith, but the Force. So that's right. How they brought it in. They used either it's a clone of Yoda or it's just a child of Yoda species. But either way, child's fucking perfectly. Powerful with the Force and is pretty intuitive about how to use it.
Yeah, and I mean, from a, you know, director's marketing standpoint, I mean, Baby Yoda was fucking genius. I mean, they killed it with that. That went viral. Everybody's got memes of it. They made millions Baby Yoda.
Well, not initially because they wanted to keep Baby Yoda such a secret that they developed two prototypes, which I think either total cost was $5 million for the Baby Yoda puppets that were created. But they wanted to keep it such a secret that they didn't even send out merchandising for Baby Yoda. So they didn't send Hasbro or any company any kind of designs so they can make toys or any merchandise whatsoever. That's how badly they wanted to keep this a secret.
Well, they succeeded because I think everybody was caught off guard.
Yeah, and that, you know, it caught everyone off guard, but it also hurt their pocket a little bit because if they had the merchandise... Everyone would have rushed out and bought all this cool Baby Yoda stuff.
Well, I think they were banking on people seeing the reaction on social media, seeing everything that's going on and thinking, hey, I want to get Disney Plus now too. And I think where they lost in merchandise sales, they might have gotten a boost in subscriptions to Disney Plus.
Maybe.
And then they did eventually put out the merchandise, and I'm sure they made bank after that. So.
Oh yeah, I'm sure tons of people bought it. I'm just saying you lose that impulse buyer of like, oh, I gotta get this now. I gotta have it.
Yeah, that's true. Let's wrap up the Jawa scene. So I mean,
well, yeah, let's. No, you could take it away. I was just gonna say, finds the egg and brings it back.
Yeah, he brings it back. Well, what I was gonna say was, you know, dozens of their people are dead, or he slaughters them, and they're like, oh, hey, it's no big deal. We got an egg to eat. Like, how good is that egg?
But that egg must be really fantastic, or it must have some sort of, I'm thinking, drug-like properties.
Oh, it's got to be. I mean, if they're willing to let like 20 some of their own people die to get to eat it,
yeah, give them all his ship parts back.
Yep.
So that's what I'm thinking. It's got to be some sort of natural drug, like weed.
It's got to be better than that to do it.
Well, it's obviously not worth getting themselves, but it's worth a ton of scrap metal and parts if they make someone else go get it.
Yeah. That was a credible knife. Just one swipe, boom, cut in half.
I know.
For them to eat. Man, I want these knives. Like, they got hell of knives in the Mandalorian.
There's a lot of knives that could... I mean, it's an egg, so you got to think, okay... Because it looks like a coconut with how hairy this darn egg is.
Right. So I kind of figure that's how tough it would be. It'd be relatively tough to... Especially if that big-ass rhino was going to be, you know, laying on it to keep it warm.
Well, we don't know that. Maybe the egg was hairy, so the rhino doesn't have to sit on it.
It could be.
But, I mean, it's like, how tough is it? It looked relatively thick, but, I mean, eggs have a softish shell, at least chicken eggs, so maybe relatively easier to cut.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Eventually, the Ugnaught and Mando, since they got all their parts back, they fixed their ship, and Ugnaught was glad just to be free of all, well, I guess the way he said it was, thank you for bringing peace to my valley again. So yeah. He's very grateful that there is now peace in his valley. But
and Mando offers him a job. He's like, hey, you're pretty good, you know, helping me put my ship back together. You got some pretty good know-how. He's like, I can pay you decently if you want to be on my crew. And Ugnaught says,
I am honored, but I have worked a lifetime to finally be free of servitude.
I understand. Then all I can offer is my thanks.
And I offer mine.
Yeah, that was a nice little scene. And it's like, you know, it's almost like a goodbye.
Pretty much. And then, you know, Mando takes off and you still don't find out anybody's names.
Yeah, you know one. Yep. There's three characters, roughly. You have the Ugnaught, which is still unnamed, Mandalorian, Mando, and Baby Yoda. And then a bunch of Jawa, so 3.5.
Well, I figured the Ugnaught would be one to figure out his name, because, you know, in case it becomes necessary for future episodes.
And right now, he's just the Ugnaught, and if you're not a Star Wars fan, you don't know what an Ugnaught is, so he's just the pig person. You don't have to be.
No, there was the giant chicken, remember?
No, the giant chicken was the Blurgs.
Yeah.
He's not a Blurg.
That's what he was. Well, no, he was... He rounds him up. He likes the Blurgs, remember? Because he wanted to tame them, the giant... Never mind.
No, I'm saying because his species
I get what you're saying.
Pig-like.
Eh, no, kind of. Not really.
Okay, I'll do it. I'll... To quote Dave Filoni, whose first episode was episode 1 to ever direct a live action, he was like, it was the weirdest thing to film the first scene because I'm directing someone in a mask and a pig-like creature, and that's it.
All right, well, if the director says so, then...
It's coming from Dave Filoni, who's probably the second most knowledgeable person on Star Wars there is besides George Lucas.
Right.
And speaking of Dave Filoni, well, I want to point out some Easter eggs, and these are Star Wars-esque, Star Wars tangenty. You see on Mandalorian's hands his two little blue arrows. Does that remind you of anything?
The Avatar The Last Airbender?
Yes. And I was watching that, and I was watching the first episode, watching the second episode, and I was like, he's got Avatar. He's got blue arrows on his hand. And then it hit me. I'm going to drop some truth knowledge on you since we're talking about Dave Filoni. For those of you who don't know, Dave Filoni got his work with Star Wars in the Clone Wars. I don't know if it was the movie, but I know for sure the TV show. George Lucas handpicked him and brought him under his wing, taught him everything he knew, and he kind of ran. He was in charge of Clone Wars. He was kind of co-in charge with someone else on Star Wars Rebels, and now he's doing The Mandalorian. So, before Dave Filoni was doing The Clone Wars, have any wild guesses of what show he was working on?
I'm going to go with Avatar The Last Airbender.
That's right. He was one of the, or not, he wasn't one of the creators, but he was one of the first artists working on that, and he directed several. If you go back and watch, at least, I know he's in the first season. He directs a handful of episodes in the first season of Avatar The Last Airbender. Hmm. So, I think Dave Filoni there's throwing subtle hints and subtle Easter eggs, tying back to some of his older works that he has under his belt, which is cool. Being a big Avatar The Last Airbender fan.
Yeah. I mean, we both are.
Yeah. And seeing that reference in The Mandalorian, it was pretty cool. I'm excited with what's coming down the pipeline because Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau, two huge Star Wars nerds. Mandalorian season 2 comes out in October 2020. And I kind of hope they kind of bump Kathleen Kennedy out, let them take the reins, because that'll make Star Wars Star Wars again.
Yeah, I know, right?
Just these two episodes in The Mandalorian says everything you kind of need to know.
I just hope that everything else that they're coming out with can be as good as The Mandalorian. Or at least I hope they do, but never set the bar too high. Why don't you give me your thoughts on this episode? How do you think it was?
So I enjoyed this episode. I thought it was great start to finish. There wasn't a dull moment at all. If there was action, when the action was going on, it was great. When the action wasn't going on, you had some subtle humors. You had some great dialogue. And Baby Yoda's freaking stealing the show. It should almost be called the Baby Yoda Show. Because he's just, his scenes are just to die for. And the puppetry to create the Baby Yoda is amazing.
I honestly think they made like 6 memes from this one episode alone.
Yeah, and it's just, the show is off to a fantastic start with both directors, Dave Filoni and Rick. I'm sorry, Rick, I'm not going to try to butcher your name, but off to a great start, great writing. I just, not much else I can say. Nothing but praise for this episode and show.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, even as I was talking about earlier in the episode, I was complimenting how good the directors were at getting just the little details right. You know, they really took the time and they did a great job with a lot of these scenes. I even loved how sometimes they'll have a camera angle. They'll have a Baby Yoda camera to where you can even see it from Baby Yoda's perspective as he's floating in the little bassinet behind him.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like just that was just great directing. That was great camera angle. I loved it. And it was just great attention to details from the directors, and I think this was a great episode as well.
Yeah, another note, I've really enjoyed the score and the music composition that has came out. It feels Star Wars, but it's an obvious departure, and I think it's different from what John Williams used to do, but it's still fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty good. I haven't really noticed that much of a different style or theme. I didn't even know they switched, what would it be called?
Composer.
Yeah, I didn't know they switched composers.
Well, it's, you know, John Williams. I think he's on the, I think after Rise of Skywalker, he was on the, you know, he's on the verge, or he is retired now, because
he's been doing it for a while.
He's got to be in his 80s.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they switched, and I would recommend, like, really paying attention to the composition and the music and how they integrate it with some of the fight scenes or some of the scenes going on. It's really good.
Yeah, I'll keep an eye out on it on the next couple of episodes, and I'll let you know.
Okay.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
kill it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, Huxley!
Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
Chris, Chris, what do we have in store next time on Deep Space High?
Well, for next week's episode of Deep Space High, we are going to be watching episode 3 of The Mandalorian, The Sin. So you were correct earlier. It was The Sin. So I love how simple these names are. Like, yes. You don't have to struggle like you did in Star Trek Picard.
Yes. And this is the episode where he brings Baby Yoda back to the client, which we'll see how this unfolds next time on Deep Space High.
Yes. And I guess that will do it for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Deep Space High. Be sure to join us next time as we continue to discuss The Mandalorian.
Don't forget to keep the conversation going over on Twitter with hashtag Deep Space High.
And let us know how we're doing by reviewing Deep Space High on Apple Podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please subscribe and share the show. I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
And I'm Jedi Master Steve. And may the Force be with you. Always.